Hi, family. My name is Karina DeLeo, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'd like to start off by saying that God is good all the time, even when I don't think so. And I'm extremely blessed to be here this evening. This group has a very soft spot in my heart. It's been my home group for the last 6 years. Especially, this is a very special time because I just celebrated 12 years of recovery. December 26, 2001 is my sober date, and for that I feel very blessed. Tonight, for this part of the series, I'm going to be sharing on steps 1, 2, and 3 what I was like before I got here. And what I was like before I got here was hopeless, you know. I was dead behind my eyes, for sure. You know, my relationships were broken, and I was in a lot of pain. A lot of pain. Could not stop drinking. I was drinking around the clock. I don't remember being born, but I do remember at the age of 2 having a very adverse reaction to life. I was not happy. Things weren't going my way. I whined a lot. I got beaten for it. I just had something inside of me that just didn't feel quite right. And, you know, this carried on with me all the way until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that that's the spiritual malady now. I went along life just feeling just very apart from, not a sense of belonging, not only to strangers, but even in my own family, I felt very different. My background is that my mother was a rageaholic, and my father left when I was 2 years old. And the reason I'm saying that story is I had this belief system for many years. I had this violence of mental images and pictures in my head that just wouldn't go away. It was just a story that just kept going on and on and on. Things that happened from when I was 2 until I was until I got here, which was 38. It was just like this story that was just in my head, and I carried it with me, and I thought that that was why I drank. I had no idea that I was an alcoholic and that I had no choice not to drink. And so, I picked up my first drink when I was 8, and I went into a blackout. You know, I didn't know that that was a blackout, but that's what I did. I guzzled a whole lot of liquor out of a friend's cabinet. I didn't pick up again until I was 12 with my friends when chipping in the schoolyards. And I remember feeling just happy. Like, everything was good. Everything seemed to make sense. I felt like, I could just be Karina, you know. And, I didn't do it every day, but whenever I could, I did. And, alcohol definitely fixed that irritable nature that I have. And, it was always, when I didn't have the alcohol, it was, if I'm here, I want to be over there. If I just get this, I'll be happy. And when I got that, I wasn't happy. So my nature is that I'm restless, irritable, discontent without something inside of me. And I ran away from home when I was 16. And the first week I ran away from home, I got pregnant. And I had my son. And that was really a game changer and a lifesaver for me. Because I did not drink or use the whole pregnancy. But as soon as my son was 3 months old, I picked up again. Now, I had times in my alcoholic life where I could stay stopped for 4 months, a year, if I had something that I had to achieve, like the pregnancy or perhaps maybe going to school or something like that. It never occurred to me that I couldn't stop drinking. I stopped for a little while, but then I would start again. And then fast forward up until the time, I want to say the last 5 years of my drinking were pretty horrendous. I don't think I drew a sober breath. And that happened simply because, as I said, I didn't want to stop drinking. But at one point, my mother had said to me, "You're an alcoholic." And I resented her for saying that. And I was like, whatever. And then I started hiding it because I didn't want people to see how much I was drinking. And I thought to myself, well, maybe I'll stop. And when I tried to stop, I realized that I couldn't. So when I tried to control it, the more I started to try to control it, the more out of control it became. And game on, that was it. And I think that in the end, like I said, the last 5 years before I got here, I really didn't care too much about whether I lived or died. My son was had become of age. He was around 16. You know, all throughout my drinking career, I always lived a double life. Like, raising my son, I was a good mommy, or the best mommy I could be, Monday through Friday, but on the weekends I was a weekend warrior, and he really never saw a lot of the stuff that took place. But drinking became an exhilarating part of my life. You know, once I tried to control it and found out that I couldn't, I started hiding it. And when I was hiding it, my husband was, I basically lost my integrity. You know, I was getting checked at the door, you know, all these kinds of things that I tried drinking less or not drinking in the morning or, you know, drinking after I put the baby to bed or put my son to bed or whatever it was, trying the controlling. Sorry, guys, I'm a little bit nervous. I'm all over the place. Anyway, the last 5 years was horrendous. It was drinking around the clock, and I knew that I had to get out of where I was. My spirit needed to move from where I was. It wasn't working anymore. There were a lot of fights in our apartment. I would swear it off, but then I couldn't do it. And ultimately, what I ended up doing was running away from home, because that's what I do. I'm a runner. I can't face anything. I had no coping skills. And, you know, even when I wasn't drinking, I couldn't manage my life. You know, the times when I wasn't drinking before the last 5 years, I would try to manage my life, and I was getting into scrapes like stealing things, lying, chronic liar. You know, that was me managing my life. And so the drinking fixed all of the voices that was in my head and the old story that I had. And so I ran away from home, and I came out to Long Island, and I ended up staying with a normie, somebody that didn't drink. And I told him that I was an alcoholic, but he really didn't believe it, because I still was able to somehow maintain, you know, I clean up really well, and I was able to hide a lot of the drinking. And he said that he didn't care, and I moved in with him, and he had a big Italian family, and everybody was close, and I really wasn't used to that. Mm-hmm. And so, again, you know, I could have just popped the head off of Louie and put him on Steve, and it would have been the same thing, because the common denominator was me. Mm-hmm. You know, and here I was. God, in his infinite mercy, put me from a place in Astoria, which was an apartment, into a house in New Hyde Park with a man that had money. I was living in a $700,000 house. I had a Corvette, I had a motorcycle, I still had a job somehow, and my son was living with me. We got him to move in there, and yet I was dying inside. You know, on paper it looked great, but the alcohol wasn't working anymore, you know, and the last 2 years I was literally drinking out of a walk-in closet. I had quarts of vodka as boot trees. They were holding up my boots, and I would literally go into the closet. It was a big walk-in closet, and I would suck down some of the alcohol just to answer the door or the phone, because I was getting paranoid. I was 30 pounds underweight, and I couldn't function without the alcohol. And this one particular day, the doorbell had rang, and I knew that it was some of his family, and I ran into the bathroom where I had some liquor hidden, and I went underneath there. I think it was scotch, because I was stealing his liquor too, so it was like all different kinds of things. And I took a swig, and I put the liquor back down, and when I came up, I looked at myself in the mirror, and it was the first time I looked at my pupils in many, many years, and there was just a gray aura around me. And the voice in my head, which I now know to be my God conscious, was said, "Did you sentence yourself to death?" And the voice right behind it was, "I don't want to die." And that was the first time that I had ever thought, "I don't want to die." Because many times if I was to tell my story, there were thoughts of suicide and there were two attempts at suicide. So the idea that my spirit wanted to live, you know, that really said a lot. And, you know, I had a couple of weeks in between there. It's kind of a little bit foggy, but I had a really bad drunk, and I had come home, and the person that I was living with, you know, asked me, had you been drinking? And my usual standard line was, are you crazy, or I only had two? But this time I said yes, and I just started crying. It was just like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And, you know, that was my sincere cry to God, you know, and the faithful God that I know today, you know, he was there at that moment when I asked. You know, I'd been pushing him away all these years and shutting him out of my life. And the minute that I asked him, he came, you know, and the person just said, you know, I know somebody that's in Alcoholics Anonymous, and maybe you might want to try something like that. Now, I'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, or if I did, I don't remember. And I said I was willing. And as I said, I still had my job. I was waitressing at the time, and I knew there was a guy there that was a counselor. Now, I didn't know it was Alcoholics Anonymous, but he was in NA, and I served him, and I asked him. I gave him his coffee in the next morning, and I said, do you know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous? And he said, no. He said, but I will get you a book. And the next morning, he brought me a meeting book. And so I rummaged through the meeting book, and it had BB and all of this, you know, lingo that I had no idea about. But I chose a meeting which was further from the place, my dwelling space that I was at, and it was called the Holy Spirit Church. And is in New Hyde Park, and I remember sitting in my car watching all of you guys laughing and talking. Now, I didn't have alcohol in me. I was able, through God's grace, not to drink that day. And it was a 2 o'clock meeting. It was Saturday afternoon, and I was like a petrified tree in my car. I can't get out of the car. Like, how am I going to talk to people? I can't do this. They all know each other. Like, I don't belong. I don't fit in. But somehow my feet got out, and I went down to the meeting, and I sat in the meeting. And you guys were talking, and you were putting labels on names on things that I was feeling, and I was blown away. For the first time, I had hope, ever. Now, I was 38 years old, I was just so closed off. It was me on me. The big show was in my head. I could never really hear what was going on with anybody else. And, you know, I was thinking, oh, my God, there's people like me. You know, and even though, like, I was sitting, like, in the middle of the room, I just felt like, it was like a rolling movie of everything that I thought and felt all these years, and I just kept crying and crying and crying. And I kind of squeezed out of the meeting before it closed because I was, you know, just full of fear, self-centered fear, you know. And so I kind of started going to that meeting every Saturday, every other Saturday, and I would pull together like 30 days. And then finally, through God's grace, I had 16 months sober. And, but I picked up stealing. I stopped drinking and I was stealing like thousands of dollars of clothes and food. Not that I needed it. I didn't need it. The guy that I was with had plenty of money, you know, and it was my dirty little secret, you know, and I ended up drinking again because, you know, it was just that white noise in my head, you know, the uncomfortability, the restless, irritable, nothing outside was going to fill that black hole in my chest that I carried with me, you know, and I was very closed off. I couldn't make friends I wouldn't make friends at the meeting because I had that self-centered fear. If they get to know me, they're going to hate me like I hate me, and you don't know what I did. And just, it was just constantly the chattering in my head, all about me, 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 me. I'm not much, but I'm all I think about, you know, and so I picked up, and I think I had like 3 one-day drinks in that summer. And I just remember thinking, not drinking is not enough. And all of the meetings that I was going to, I wasn't hearing anything about our principle, which is Alcoholics Anonymous, the directions on how to get sober, you know. And I didn't hear that, you know. And it might have been there. I don't know what was going on with me. But internally, I knew that that last drunk, that I was going to go back to AA, and I was going to do it AA's way, you know. And I had heard somewhere in that 16 months, do a 90 and 90, because that's what they were doing in the contemporary meetings I was going to, and get a sponsor, which I was not going to do. And I have a problem with authority. I'm very defiant, you know, that's the earmarkings of an alcoholic. But I did do the 90 and 90. And in the 90 and 90, I started to really catch on. You know, I was doing steps 1, 2, and 3 in my heart. It wasn't really a mechanical thing, you know, as per reading through the text. And I found a woman inexplicably different thing in her eyes that I'd never saw in anybody else's eyes. And it was a little twinkle. It was a big book study, and she was facilitating it with a young man, and she had what I wanted. And she, to me, was successful in life, because I could never do that. I could never be happy and stand or sit in front of a room or even one-to-one and talk to people, you know. And I knew that she was armed with the facts about herself. I knew that. Innately, I just knew that. And I think I had about 60 days sober at that time, you know, and I knew that I was powerless over that alcohol. My experience showed me that. You know, my mind kept telling me all those years up until that point that if I could just have a sip of this just to calm my nerves, I'm going to be good. I'll just have a sip just to take the ease, you know, get a little ease and comfort, because I like the effect produced by alcohol. I like that. But I overshot the mark every time, and I believed that lie, and I would take the drink, and then I would just, the craving was on, and I couldn't stop, you know. And I thought I was a weakling. I thought that I was morally, you know, inept, you know. And yes, to some extent, those things were true: the lying, the cheating, the stealing, you know, the inconsiderate behavior, you know, all of that stuff. That was true, you know. But it wasn't true in regards to the alcohol, you know. And I didn't know what it meant to be an alcoholic, even though I was raising my hand and saying, my name is Karina and I'm an alcoholic. And so I went up to her after the meeting and I asked her if she would help me. And she said yes. And she carved out some time for me. And we sat one-on-one. She was my Ebby. She sat with me and we started to read the text. And I could tell you, when I read the doctor's opinion, I was blown away. Now, I had had many first step experiences out there. There were many times where I surrendered, and I knew and wanted so badly to stop drinking, but I couldn't. I didn't have the second step in place. So the first step is not going to be sufficient enough. I need to follow that up with the second step, which means that alcohol was a power greater than myself. It did for me, at one time, it was a solution. Unfortunately, that solution was killing me. I needed to find a power by which I could live. And that power was going to have to be God, you know. And we started to read We Agnostic, and that chapter is, you know, talking to someone like me. You know, I had a God that was my mother's God. I was raised Roman Catholic. We went to church, but my mother, here and there. You know, she would get us there, and she had to work. She had 3 children that she was raising. But, you know, if nothing else, I really thank her from the bottom of my heart for doing that. Because as a young girl, I loved God. There was a time when I was like 7 and 8, I wanted to be a nun. I really loved God a lot. Somewhere life got me caught up. And as I said, things weren't going my way. And I just turned. I turned away from God, and no God, no power. And so we started to read We Agnostic, and started poking holes at my belief system. You know, and I realized that I was an agnostic, you know, that I wasn't an atheist, that I did believe that there was a God, but I didn't think that he wanted any, I didn't think that he was pursuing me. I had no idea that he was pursuing me every day, and that he really cared about what would happen to me in my life. I knew that he made the stars and the moon, and I knew that he perhaps was helping my sponsor and a lot of the people that I saw in the room, but I didn't really think that I could somehow have a relationship with this God. And so we started to talk a little bit about that. Now, I don't know that my sponsor was as in-depth or as knowledgeable or maybe spiritually farther along as some of us are here now. So, and even myself today, coming up on 12 years, but practicing only 6. So there wasn't a whole lot of working around that, but I get to work around we agnostic with a lot of the women that I work with now. The steps for me are all in hindsight. The book is written in hindsight, and I kind of connected the dots. Now that this is the new year, this is always a reflective part of the year for me, having an anniversary and then new year, trying to get rid of the old spiritually and looking how far along I've come, and knowing that I was doing the series, I was kind of thinking about, you know, things that have been deposited in me, things that have been pruned by God out of me. And so I was able to connect that, you know, with each step there is a surrender. And, you know, like I really didn't understand step one until I got into step two. And I didn't understand step two until I was in step three. And all of them have been like that for me, you know, and they just kind of take on new life as I go along. So step two, the meaning that it had for me back then was spirit, you know, and I knew that I did not, from the point of walking into Alcoholics Anonymous, God's mercy, God's grace, I had no power to do that. Meeting up with that woman that helped me and gotten me, you know, started me on this journey. And being able, up until that point, you know, I remember driving home. I had a convertible at the time, and I was looking up saying, I don't know who you are or what you are, but please keep helping me. And I just thank you so much. You know, and I was lying a little bit less. I was still stealing. That wasn't taken from me. That took a little while, even though I was in the book and not drinking. You know, this is about practicing and obedience and, you know, disciplines. And we let God discipline us. You know, I came in here a very, very sick girl. And that still brings a lot of shame for me. But, you know, in my weakness, I find my strength. And, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to get real here. This is what the, you know, this is... this is where the tough people hang out, you know. It's not out there. It's in here. And, you know, I feel very exposed, but, you know, I want to expose you to the power of God, you know. And the third step for me was an unfolding, I would have to say, in that I did a technical step three. You know, it was, yes, you know, I'm willing to move forward. I don't know what God's will is for me, but I'm definitely willing to get, I couldn't wait to do this fourth step. Like, this, I already knew all of this. I wanted this out. I wanted to unplug the TV set. I needed to get rid of that movie. It was just too much for me, you know. And so, you know, the technical side of it, yes, that I make a contract with God. But I really already had a prayer written on my heart. They give us a prayer in the text, and it says, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, so that victory over them may bear witness to those that I might help, of your power, your love, and your ways. And so I stand before you tonight as living out my third step. He promised to relieve me of the bondage of self, and my commitment is that I would show all of you his power, his love, and his way of life. I have no power to do this or anything in my life. And so that's the meaning that it takes on today. And it just keeps evolving, you know, that third step. You know, it doesn't mean that I'm going to put my will in God's, in his hands. He doesn't want my will. I'm going to put my life in his care. God is actively pursuing me and wants to take care of me. And when I think of that, it's such a beautiful thing. My sponsor didn't have me write a third step, but I do that with the women that I work with now, and it's an unfolding of a prayer that's written on your specific heart so that it makes sense to you. And it was the forming. I felt new power flow in. That's a third step promise that we have. I felt just a little lighter, and knowing that I wasn't alone. I didn't know that it was the God that I have now. I knew that it was spirit moving me, and it was the beginning of the renovation of my soul. That's the only way that I could put it. And it talks about in the book that we were renewed and we were reborn. Reborn meaning spirit. You know, so there's going to be a demolition of soul. And I welcomed it. I needed it. And I needed it desperately. And, you know, this group is has helped me to grow as a good AA-er and as a woman. you know, as a healthy woman. And I've had so many beautiful spiritual experiences with many of you, many God talks on stoops, in coffee shops, over the phone, in churches. I mean, this is the real deal. We're brothers and sisters, and this is what we get to do. Thanks.